All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast. It's Tuesday. It's March 10th. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is
James Davis.
And we are on the heels of one of the crazier DFS nights that I can remember in recent memory. DFS is crazy.
Every night. Always say that, too.
No, I know we joke about that, but this one was completely unique. Bucks. I practiced this 10 times. I still can't say it. The crazy that I was going to combine the word Bucks and apocalypse, and I simply can't get there, no matter how many times I try to say it out loud to myself. But so like last night, Giannis is ruled out. Way early, like the day before, so everyone knows he's not going to play, which almost always sets up, you know, Middleton, Bledsoe, and then usually like some other third piece chalk. Bledsoe then gets downgraded to doubtful about a half hour before the actual slate starts. So it's like, okay, well, we'll get, you know, get Dante DiVincenzo in there, and we'll get the, you know, there's some ways to go here. Middleton, maybe Middleton looks even better. Then an hour and 15 minutes after the slate starts, but 15 minutes before the not scheduled tip off, but like the 9 o'clock Eastern thing starts, we get that now that Middleton is out in Brooklyn, and now they're just sitting everybody, and now you get like you get Giannis's brothers in there, Sterling Brown, who hasn't played a minute in like four games, is going to start, and they throw in the white towel. I mean, can you remember something like that? And by the way, like Middleton was like 96% start on FanDuel. and most people, I will say, I'm going to give a compliment then a question. One, if you were in our chat room last night, this was not a problem for you. We pivoted everything and actually got a lineup with all these Bucks guys in there, and like Jokic and everything kind of just like worked out, sort of been a miracle because the Charlotte and Atlanta guys like didn't kind of overrun the original lineup. So we had no problem. Like we had 15 minutes to spare. If you jump back in the chat, we talked through all the scenarios and we were good. But can you remember a situation like where this high of an ownership, multiple guys, by the way, like Brooke Lopez was 50%. These guys remain 50% starts in DraftKings because not everyone can switch. Can you remember a time where two guys who were like 90% starts each just didn't play? just didn't play at all. These are my favorite times to go to Twitter and just type in like DraftKings and FanDuel and look at like the support stuff that people, because it's an absolute sea of bloodbath people asking for their money back and just being generally pissed and just like...
Well, this is why I've always said they should have, like, where you drop your lowest score in case there's an injury or something like that.
It wouldn't have mattered. Everyone would have dropped Middleton.
I'm just kidding.
I know you're kidding because that was a rule stupid that FanDuel thankfully went back and just said that. This didn't have the intended consequences that we thought it was going to have. But, yeah, like, this is... I struggled to think of another example. And do you think... Does it lend credence to the late swap? Does it like not really matter? Because we see even sites with late swaps, like there's still a massive edge. In some ways, this to me is the case against the late swap because just sort of everyone's in the same boat. But I get that those that are...
Well, the issue always with ways to... Whenever you add more decision points, that's going to favor the more skilled players. And so if that's the goal, to make DFS just a more skill-intensive game, that late swap, dropping the lowest score, the more complicated you make it, the better players are going to do for the most part. And then the more efficient or dumbed down you're going to make it, like basic sports betting, right? Where they're like, you think the Pats are going to win or the Broncos? And you're like, Broncos, man.
Right.
+5.5. Like the spread is in there to dummy proof it for you in case you're just too stupid to, because they want you to kind of win sometimes, kind of lose sometimes. The more stuff you add like that in DFS, like all the people that just put their lineups in at 7 o'clock and like went to bed on DraftKings just got absolutely rolled and smoked last night, right? So that did not benefit the weaker players who were like, ooh, now I can get away from my guy that got injured. It benefited people like us and our chatters who, you know, are equipped to make changes like that on the fly. So it's good for us. I don't mind it. Whether it's good for the whole industry is a different question.
Yeah, I very much doubt we see something like that anytime soon. And like I don't know if I said this already, but I do think it actually existed outside the bounds of the NBA's reporting process on lineup, which is supposed to be 30 minutes. But it's a little weird with that because the scheduled time that a game starts is not the actual tip-off. So tip-off is typically like 10 to 15 minutes after the lock. It's like this isn't like baseball where it starts at 7:05 and the first pitch is at 7:05. Like the NBA could actually do a lot. It could go a long way to correct some of these things and just say this is not when the actual game tips off. The game tips off at 7:15 Eastern. It's just, you know, for the TV broadcast at 7. So I don't know if eventually we'll have something like that put into place. Anyway, crazy night. Hopefully Tuesday kind of lends itself to a little bit more sanity. We have a 9-game slate. a lot of injury news to get into, a lot of just kind of different ways to take this, some starting lineup changes for some teams. We'll go break it down game by game and kind of walk you through the different scenarios. The first one is 7 o'clock Eastern. Boston goes in and plays the Pacers. The injury news here is that Jaylen Brown remains out, so we have some idea of how Boston's going to play this without him. And then on the Indy side right now, Brogdon has been ruled out. He's out for a while. He had like a torn quad. Pretty bad loss for them. And then Victor Oladipo right now is questionable. So we'll have all this information. We'll have that information ahead of time. We saw a lot of ownership on some of these Boston guys the other day. It was a little bit of a shorter slate with guys like Hayward. Kemba, I think, is still on a minutes limit, so it's tough to trust that. Thoughts on this game? I do not think I can go back to the Aaron Holiday well, even if Malcolm Brogdon.
Well, that's where I was going to start, because the Holiday has seen, you know, north of 40% ownership, depending on the night, and he's seen hitting 6x on his price and going for less than 3. So it's a pretty volatile one. At the beginning of a 9-game slate, I'm hoping for better. I will say that. I don't think, you know, if he were just to get the start again and you could count on the minutes, I understand that the production really wasn't there. I think you could at least consider it, right? I mean, like, we're seeing a consistent 32 to 35 minute rotation. Isn't his average use case in that, like, you know, 5x roughly on this price? I don't think that's outrageous.
It's not outrageous. And on a big slate, there's just probably enough other cheap guys in here that we can trust more from just a overall production standpoint. And I think that's probably where he gets left on the cutting room floor. I think that he has upside. And I will say, too, if Oladipo weren't to play, I would like that. I would like this a lot more. If Oladipo weren't to play, guys like Holiday, TJ Warren would get a pretty big bump from a usage perspective here. Even like maybe depending on who they started, like a TJ McConnell or even Justin Holiday, depending on how they wanted to roll the lineup without Oladipo. I think I would need to start for me with Oladipo out, and then I'd kind of move it from there. I do think Hayward is still a pretty good value on FanDuel at a somewhat weaker small forward position. He was hurt, but then came back with no minutes restriction and just played 38 minutes the other day. And with Kemba on a minutes restriction, we still sort of implied that Hayward does get, he sees enough production. Like, he, you know, he runs the offense at times. It's clear that they have no problem playing him minutes. So at 6,100 on FanDuel, Hayward to me is probably still a cash game play. But I'm going to want to see some of the rest of the injury news here around Indy, I think, before I can make any judgments. New York goes in and plays Washington in the other 7 o'clock game. Washington, 4.5-point home favorites. I mean, one of the great labors of DFS is auditing minutes each night and then seeing that Washington is coming up and thinking to yourself, I'm the one that has to look at this team and figure out, outside of Bradley Beal, where the minutes are going to go. Like, okay. Like, it's just impossible. Like, this team is impossible. Like, so the other day, Beal's fine. Okay, Beal, you just give him like his 39 minutes and 40 minutes and whatever you call it a day on him. But then you get like Roy Hachimura played 40 minutes and Shabazz Napier played a ton. And then, you know, Thomas Bryant's going to start, but he's going to play 20 minutes. Like, is it just Beal or bust here? Even Roy Hachimura, who played 40 minutes, I just can't trust these guys. Like, I just don't, even a good, decent matchup against the Knicks. But are we here? I mean, are we firmly here on the Washington guys? Like, on a big slate, if you saw more than Bradley Beal as a Washington guy in a lineup, you'd have to think long and hard about it, right? You just can't trust this team at all.
Yeah, I would be absolutely terrified if I saw any other Wizards besides Beal. You know, it's funny. Some of our folks wanted to run Bryant out there because he had three straight games of decent production on a roughly $4,000 price tag. Got 24 minutes against Atlanta, and that had people dreaming, like, hey, man, you know, Bryant's pretty good on a points-per-minute basis. Goes out and plays 16 minutes against Miami, compiles 3.6 fantasy points. So I think he was, like, the second seemingly safest guy on this team beforehand. And now I think you could pretty much put him in the category with everyone else. And, yeah, there, for GPP purposes, if you know that Rui Hachimura is occasionally going to play 39 minutes, he could certainly score 40 fantasy points on that total. It's just that he might play 28, and he can score 16 on that total as well. So I can't imagine for cash games, even Beal, potentially in a stretch situation now. Like, I think we played him on Saturday or Sunday. And he was off chalk, even though that was a very, very chalky night. He hit almost exactly 50 fantasy points against Atlanta, so an equally good matchup. I don't even know that necessarily be interested in playing Beal here.
Yeah, and then I think, like, Shabazz Napier is the other one. He played 39 minutes. Ish Smith was out that game. He played 39 minutes against Miami and scored 48 fantasy points. I can see people maybe dreaming on him too. And, you know, Ish out and the secondary point guard kind of stuff is there. I get it, but man, it's still, you just can't trust this team at all. We have too long of a track record where those 38 minutes turn into 25 the next game. And I get there's context around the Ish Smith thing. So and he played so well in the last game. Maybe this is the one situation where you get bullish.
Yeah,
on
I think Napier's playable. I think that's probably a good call. It's just that he's not even that cheap anymore is kind of the question. So, like, you know, if Napier just inherited the starting role and started and played Washington starter minutes, 34 minutes maybe, you know, on the really high end for these Washington guys, how much would he be worth?
Right.
$6,000? And he's 5,700 now. I don't know. It's not like you're really not getting away with anything, I guess, is my
right. Because here's the thing. He's been starting. He's been starting for this team. It's just that the minutes.
Exactly.
Just
you're
the
just
minutes
cleaning up a few extra minutes.
Right.
Exactly.
You're just giving him. You're giving him six to you know ten, six to ten. If you want to be you know, intellectually honest about it, like 6 to 10 extra minutes. And right at like 5,600 on DraftKings, and you said like 6,000 on draft or 5,700 on FanDuel. It's close, but and it's not a bad situation. And you know, we're going to get to some other names here that I think you can tend to trust a little bit more. Before we get to the 8 o'clock games, got to hit you with a sponsor, The Athletic. The Athletic, you have to know these guys at this point because they're just scooping up some of all the best content people around for every single sport. It's a subscription-based sports news site for real fans. In-depth coverage from local writers on every single team. Plus national writers, you know, like Shams Charania, John Hollinger, Zach Harper, David Aldridge. These are the basketball guys. Shams, and we've said this before, Shams has entered sort of like the Woj class of, you know, there's Woj bombs, and then Shams is not too far behind him in terms of NBA reporting at this point. The Athletic set it up a subscription-based service, so it's behind a paywall, but it's one of those paywalls that, you know, we talk about our subscription service and how it's just kind of worth it. The Athletic is just worth it. If you're a real NBA fan, especially if you follow different teams, like I know I'm a subscriber to The Athletic, so I know for sure the other day the Shams dropped a really great article about the Kenny Atkinson firing for the Brooklyn Nets, and it was the most in-depth coverage I've seen anywhere of sort of trying to explain what happened behind the firing and, you know, who sort of were the voices in it and, you know, where a lot of the thought process came from and like one of the more surprising firings. So this is a long way to say The Athletic is just worth it. Like if you're following specific teams, they just have insider access and are going to give you sometimes content that most other people aren't going to be able to see because if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, no ads, no pop-ups, no clickbait, just great sports writing that tells the story behind the story, player profiles, deep dive on analytics, team power rankings, also fantasy insights. You also get, right when you sign up, they ask you to you click off the teams and the leagues that you want to see, and they right away personalize the feed for you so that you're just going to get the content that you want to see with your favorite teams and all the latest storylines, yada, yada, yada. Right now, you can get The Athletic if you go to theathletic.com/overtime, all lowercase, theathletic.com/overtime, like the podcast network we're on. You get a 40% off a yearly subscription. That works out to less than $3 a month. Totally worth it if you're kind of engaged in this kind of content. So go to theathletic.com/overtime, all lowercase. Get 40% off that yearly subscription. You will not regret it. Theathletic.com/overtime. Go check them out. Join me in reading The Athletic. Love these guys.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why? And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Okay, let's keep rolling through the games. 8 o'clock, Cleveland, Chicago, a game that means nothing for the standings, but has, well, I guess maybe if you're fighting for draft picks here, but has actually a lot of DFS relevance now. And this is what starts happening when we get late in the season with some of these bad teams that just started making wholesale changes or guys get hurt. So I'll start on the Cleveland side. They are still without Kevin Porter, who is out with a concussion. They are still without Darius Garland, who has been out, but he's going to sit out at least one more game. And they're also without Tristan Thompson. And I want to get, I thought about, you know, this, I knew we were going to talk about maybe this at length on the podcast when I was writing him up last night, but Andre Drummond, when he came over from in the trade, it was like, oh, okay, you know, kind of same opportunity, but then they kind of just buried him. Like, he was playing no minutes, a lot of foul trouble. The last couple games, he played 35, then sat out three, then played 33, but he was in foul trouble. When he plays, he's just dominant, right? Like, it's the per minute thing has not been an issue. It's just the minutes. I set him at 34 minutes tonight, and I think he's probably the best value on the slate in terms on DraftKings, excuse me, on FanDuel at 8,200. Are we able to, with Tristan Thompson out, are we able to trust Andre Drummond here from a cash game perspective? Because this has been a sticky situation. We're going to get to some of the other guys here in a second, but I'm going to start with Drummond. Is he a trust? Is this a guy we can trust in cash games? Because we've been on the wrong side of this, you know, wanting to give him bullish minutes in the past.
Well, I'm pleased to see that we have 2-game sample now of him playing bigger minutes, because we know what he's capable of on a per minute basis, right? I mean, that's never been in question at all. It's just that the Cavs have elected to only run him out there for 23 minutes a game for who knows why. Right. It's just crazy situation. So the fact that he's now in a 33 to 35 minute rotation probably means he should be priced more like he was in Detroit, which was significantly above this current total. And while it's the Cavs and it's going to be tough to play a big man in most of their matchups because they're going to be expected to get blown out, going against Chicago is probably not one of those situations, right? So I think when you look at Drummond here, the idea that, like, basically everything is working in his favor. The minutes are on the uptick. The matchup is as good as it gets. Chicago's been about, like, in that fight for dead last against opposing centers all season long. And the fact that they're only 4.5-point dogs, yeah, I think it's Drummond right here.
Okay, so we have Drummond. I think we feel pretty comfortable on that one. Center's not all that deep a position. There are some mid-tier guys that I find interesting. We'll get to those shortly. What about the rest of these guys? We got a ton of minutes out of Nance off the bench last game with Thompson didn't play. We've seen Colin Sexton play a ton without Darius Garland, mm-hmm. get a lot of usage. Got even Matthew Dellavedova played like 40-something minutes in regulation the other day and had, mm-hmm. 14 points and 11 assists in 39 regulation minutes against the Spurs. Other thoughts here. Sexton's usage wasn't as crazy in that last game with Drummond coming back, but he still played close to 40 minutes. Thoughts on some of these other Cavs guys? Still looking at a team that's very thin and has had no problem running the main contributors a ton of minutes in the short term.
Yeah, so Drummond definitely impacts Sexton's usage, and it's worth keeping in mind. The thing with Sexton, though, is, you know, we were talking about Shabazz Napier and wondering what his true price would be as a starter with 35 minutes a game. I asked the same question about Colin Sexton because, frankly, Drummond coming back, if that just makes, like, if that reduces Sexton's overall fantasy output by 10%, he's still the best player on the board. Right. If it reduces it by 20%, now you're in, it's more of a competition, but that he would still be good for around 6x points per dollar on any given night. And I think I'm still fine rolling Sexton out there. Again, I want to do it in better matchups. I don't think, like, we were just kind of blindly throwing him in there against Utah, whoever, Denver. I think given that things are, you know, filling out a little bit more around him, I don't think you can just employ him without being a little bit judicious. But sure, against Chicago, I mean, Chicago not nearly as bad against other positions. as they are against center. But I think Sexton's floor is basically what we saw last game, around 30 fantasy points. And I think that's plenty going into a slate like this.
Okay, so yeah, the case for Sexton is that in the end, the minutes were the same. The usage was basically the same, if not higher. He still took 19 shots. He got to the line 11 times last game. The assist numbers have never really been all that great from him. He's got a score to hit these numbers. The case against him is that he played five less minutes. He had been playing like 40, 45, 39. Last game with the overtime, he only played 34 minutes in regulation. So that would be your only little concern on Sexton. Let's go over to the Bulls. So the news on the Bulls here is that they have made a starting lineup change, and they're going to start Coby White instead of Tomas Satoransky. Coby White had been like sort of like the nominal starter in the short term. He had been coming off the bench but playing just a ton of minutes off the bench. He even played 35, 37, 34 over right. since the Zach LaVine injury. Now he's just going to start. And I'm wondering, one, what you think the real minutes should be on this guy who's already playing just like the whole game outside of the initial rotation when he just wasn't there for the first 6 minutes of the game. And then is he just like a cash game play? Like, he's 6,400 on FanDuel. That feels like a pretty good value. Like, this guy's a really good fantasy player. And you also have Shaquille Harrison, who's been playing a monster amount of minutes. He's not really the point guard, but he's labeled as a point guard on these sites. He's played 35 and 33 and been amazing. Can we just maybe stack the Bulls backcourt here with the assumption that like these are all the guard minutes now? Like, do you feel safe saying that with this move, or do we still kind of need one game to see what the plan is?
I think that's an option. I'm a little bit more concerned about Harrison just because a lot of the value the last few games has come from an incredible surge in defensive stats. Now, if you followed Harrison all season, I haven't, but I did go back and look at his game log. He can put up defensive stats in bunches. I mean, even when he was playing 15 to 20 minutes a game, it wasn't uncommon for him to chip in two defensive stats. Like, he really is a guy that can put up numbers on the defensive end. So, you know, whether he's going to get five defensive stats a game the way he has the last two games remains to be seen. You know, no player in the NBA does that, so I would assume that he also will not do that. But you never know. Even if he's good for three defensive stats a game, that's a heck of a floor to just begin with on a sub $5,000 price tag. So I think if you can get 30 to 33 minutes a game out of him, definitely an interesting option here. The Bulls have been sort of weird with minutes recently, but I think them committing to Harrison and White just makes sense for them now. It makes sense for them in the future. And yeah, I think it's an option. Coby White, I think he's kind of funny too. You got scolded, by our chat for not playing him off the bench. I think the only question I have about this is, we've seen this a number of times, guys running the second unit, a lot of his usage comes from playing alongside the guys that just don't do anything at all, especially on these shallow teams like the Bulls, who really run out some names that you've never heard of before coming out of that second unit. Are you worried at all that concentrating his minutes alongside the starters might have some downward pressure on his performance? Because I mean, the performance has absolutely been there, but if like, can he really play more minutes is my question. And if he's playing minutes alongside the starters instead of the second unit, should we actually potentially look at a little decrease in production here?
No, I'm not too worried about that. I think that the starting unit for them right now is not filled up with incredibly high usage guys. Like, it's him. It's not going to be him, Shaquille Harrison, who's not, Denzel Valentine, who like will take shots but doesn't play a ton of minutes. He's one of these guys that's like cutting room floor with the starters. Lauri Markkanen a little bit, but he's still in a minutes restriction. And then Wendell Carter Jr. Like, this is not a group that actually just like is trying to find their shot. And the second unit, he was basically playing with the starters closing games anyway, because he had been playing so many minutes. He was playing starter minutes. So the long story short is, no, I'm not really worried about that piece of it. They just don't really have a ton of other guys that just can get their own shots. And the assist numbers for him were decent as well. Like, he's had 8, 6, 6, 5 assists over the last four games. So there's some ball distribution stuff too. I'm not too worried about it. I guess the only problem is that the price has come up off all these bench minutes already. So he's not exactly, like, if he was 5,000, I don't think we'd even be talking about it. 6,400 on FanDuel has it a little closer. And I think he's like, he might even be like 7,000 on DraftKings. And these are the only 6,800. I think the only question now is that if the price is probably ticked up just enough, but he could play 40 minutes. I just don't know. I wouldn't be shocked, like, if we looked at after this game and they were like, oh, Coby White just played 40 minutes this game. So who knows? I think from that standpoint, you can't take him there right out of the gate. I remember he had 37 minutes, which is very aggressive. But I think that there's some chance we see him as a value, and I doubt that he's not going to put like 60 fantasy points. I don't think we're totally at risk of that. All right, let's keep rolling here. Minnesota goes in and plays Houston. Houston on a pretty bad skid here. They've lost four in a row, and a couple of these aren't like exactly the elite of the elite of the NBA. They lost to Orlando. They lost to Charlotte. They did lose to the Clippers, and they lost to the Knicks. So this is the last four games. The last four games, for all the small ball talk, centers have come absolutely brutalized the Knicks over the last five games. It is, so if you want to assume that everyone's labeling their guys, this is always the hardest part. It's like, you know, where you're labeling your players, but opposing centers over the last five are averaging 25 points a game, 19 rebounds, which is three rebounds more than the next closest team allowing this. Like the 25 is right on par with it, what Atlanta's doing. And that's part of that is just on like the double overtime game last night against the Hornets. So it's not even like a perfect one-to-one comparison. Against the Heat. No, sorry, against the Hornets. I had it right the first time. Late season is where we kind of start doing this stuff. I kind of started going in and readjusting some of our defensive stats for Houston because we're just getting a track record now of the small ball era. It's all fun and games, but when you just don't have a guy over 6'7", 6'8", on the court, other teams can take advantage. What are your thoughts here on what's happened to Houston recently? And then we can talk a little about the game.
Yeah, well, I think when stats match your priors and, you know, you say Houston is now smaller. That should mean that they rebound the ball worse. Yep. And then if they start rebounding the ball worse, I think you can start making adjustments to the underlying expectation. And they're certainly a team where you can just throw out the year-long defense-first position stuff, especially when it comes to rebounding for that exact reason. So, yeah, I'm comfortable doing that. The question is, how does that really impact our DFS strategy when it comes to Minnesota? Because, you know, they're basically splitting minutes now between guys like Naz Reid and James Johnson. They don't run, you know, while Towns is on the sidelines, none of their guys qualify at center. So it's not like this is some team with the Twin Towers is just going to come in and clean up the boards. Does this open up some obvious value that I'm missing here?
I was going to talk about Naz Reid. I think Reid is just, he is the center when he's on the court here. He has good per minute rebounding numbers. His problem is that, you know, he's just not going to ever top 28 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. That's tough.
And so I think that he has a decent floor on this number, but I'm also just a little bit worried about the blowout. It was mostly just kind of like opening up the conversation about what to do with like a team that's obviously had clearly some kind of monumental shift in the way that they've approached, and the stats are bearing it out. And maybe this isn't the game where we attack it, so it's moot anyway. They are 12.5-point favorites, so you're worried about the blowout. Right now, in our system, going from the other direction, is James Harden is basically showing up in every lineup on FanDuel, and a lot of the lineups on DraftKings early on. These things are always subject to change, but usually when it's the most expensive guy showing up around top lineups, that is not the piece that ends up moving later on. It's you know, the more ancillary pieces. How are we feeling about Harden here? The production has been okay, and Minnesota, they're another one where their season-long sort of stats don't really reflect what is happening to them because they don't play any defense at all. Like this new team, the D'Angelo Russells and Malik Beasleys and, you know, Naz Reid at center and this group, they can let up a ton of points. There's just no doubt about it. They allowed 120 to New Orleans, 132 to Atlanta, 108 to Chicago, 139 to New Orleans. These are the last four games. And then 111 to Dallas, who took their foot off the gas late. 136 to Orlando. I mean, the list goes on. This team just lets up so many points. Is Harden just a player? Harden and Westbrook? Like, where do you stand here? Because this is, Minnesota really does now represent one of the best DFS matchups around.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think the only potential fly in the ointment here is the blowout, right? Houston 12.5-point favorites here. If you want to make the argument that if the blowout happens, it's because of the contributions of guys like Harden and Westbrook, I'm certainly listening there. I think you're taking on some significant portion of risk, though, by walking into this way. Westbrook, you know, missed a game recently, supposedly due to rest against Charlotte. But in his other two games, 30 and 32 minutes, granted there were game script issues in those ones too, particularly that Clippers game where Houston basically just got run off the court in the first half. But there could be game script issues here too. And if Houston is eyeing a playoff run, understanding that this pace of basketball that they're playing, this style of play, might just not be sustainable for four straight months here as they try to gear up for the playoffs. I think these guys will be at risk of losing minutes going forward. So yeah, it's about as good a matchup as you could possibly get. I think you'll be able to afford it. I'm also just going to be at least looking at my other big money options just to see if there might be that tiebreaker where I can get a good big money guy in a game script that's not potentially quite as crazy.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's a make or miss league. The losses for the Rockets have come down to them just not being able to hit threes. Harden has shot 19% from three over the last four games. 3 for 10, 2 for 11, and an 0 for 8 against the Clippers. So if these shots...
By the way, no offense to anyone out there, but I've heard analysis being like, see, Harden's getting worn down. He's just going to start missing all threes. No, he's not. This is just, the Rockets shoot 50 threes a game. Some nights they're going to shoot 19% and they're going to lose, but they're usually not. So just relax. That has nothing to do with what he's going to do going forward.
Just go down Harden's game log and just look at the stretches where a couple games the shot doesn't fall, and a couple games then it just turns around. Like, this is just what happens for this guy. I think he's played fewer minutes this year than he played last year. When Chris Paul was hurt, he went on that.
Well, the idea is that it's a rougher style, right? He's got to get in there, bang and bodies.
There's no difference. There's no difference in it. I don't think. I'm not worried about that piece of it. And I think he has a pretty high floor in this game, just because, like I said, Minnesota is real, real trash on defense. All right, let's keep rolling here. Dallas goes in and plays San Antonio. There is a number of injury pieces that are hanging out here. The first and foremost is Luka Doncic is questionable right now with a wrist injury. He's gotten kind of banged up in some weird ways this year, but he's questionable. I'm hoping that we have that news. This starts an hour after lock. I am hoping that we have that news. I think it's really not worth it to speculate too much on this situation without knowing what his status is, except to say if he does play, the floor is pretty high here. I think I'd probably prefer Harden in the big money play. If he didn't play, then we'd have to instantly bump up these other pieces like Kristaps and whatnot. Yeah. Like Kristaps just becomes like probably a must play. But again, we don't really know right now. And I think those are just kind of like the quick one-to-one comparisons. On the San Antonio side, their DeJounte Murray is now out with doesn't have a timetable to return. So he is out of the starting lineup. I'm projecting Derek White to start. And White looks like a pretty good value to me here. Taking over that role. I actually don't even mind a White sort of like DeRozan style stack in this game. I think both of them are coming at reasonable prices. What are your thoughts here on the Spurs now without LaMarcus Aldridge and without DeJounte Murray? Not like DeJounte Murray had tremendous usage or anything, but decent amount of minutes and kind of soaked up a lot of stats as well.
Yeah, well, Murray does actually have pretty reasonable time of possession on this team. He's one of the lead creators for other people. You know, the Spurs are kind of an unconventional team this way, that basically just because their chief time of possession guy, DeMar DeRozan, is not a notoriously great passer. Like, he's thought of more as a ball stopper. DeRozan has been distributing pretty well recently. He was averaging just a hair under 9 assists in the 5 games leading into that Cleveland game. And I certainly think that's sort of his role right now. So when you look at Derek White, I think you want to view him as not as a point guard, even though he's listed as a point guard, but more as a shooting guard that stands to inherit more minutes. He had been sort of that second unit energy guy sort of feel to it. But like we've talked about many times before, the best possible punts for us are those guys when, if you look at their box score, you're like, this price kind of makes sense. Right now he's 4,800 on FanDuel. He's getting there, around 25-ish fantasy points a game in his last 6 games. It'd be really tough for him to be worse with Murray's, such as it is, his minutes and usage and time of possession being redistributed. So I think White does actually bring a pretty significant floor. Whether he gets there alongside of some of the really good point guard plays that we've already discussed, like the Bulls guys in particular, you know, that remains to be seen for me. But yeah, I think you can be somewhat aggressive with White, knowing that it's going to be pretty tough for him to kill you completely.
Yeah, point guard is just completely loaded on the slate. That's the other thing.
Yeah,
we have Shaquille Harrison, we mentioned White, Napier is an interesting guy. We're going to get to Rubio in a second. I think Rubio is a great value. So there just are, and then depending on how you want to label them on DraftKings, like Harden is labeled a point guard. And so we just have a lot of these just different guys. So that'd be the only case against it, is that just saying there's just a lot of options at point guard, and you can only play 2, maybe 3 of them if you can get over to draft. I mean, sometimes at DraftKings you can get up to 4 depending on how they're labeled. So that's that's really the only consideration there. And a good point about DeRozan wrote about that, that the assist numbers have ticked up, where the usage has not really gone in the same the right direction, I thought, with where Aldridge, his role in the offense has at least ticked him up to have a nice floor. And obviously keep an eye out for that Luka Doncic news, because that could just completely change the slate. All right, Orlando goes in and plays Memphis. Memphis, for all the injuries that they've been dealt, still just kind of hanging around as like a pretty good team here. They're still right now in the Western Conference. They're right now, if the playoffs started today, they'd still be in the playoffs. They're a few games up on, let's see, they're four games up on New Orleans in the loss column. And it looks like they're going to get Jaren Jackson back fairly soon. Not for this game, but that would be a move in the right direction. From a fantasy standpoint, though, I'm not sure what this game really does for us. Evan Fournier obviously has been out for the Magic. That hasn't really translated too much into where we want to be for some of these other guys. And then on the Memphis side, they've just played just a lot of blowouts. It's been weird to kind of try to figure their minutes in the short term, because a lot of their games, win or loss, over the last few have just been games that one way or the other have been completely out of hand. Give me your thoughts on this game and on a big slate, if there's any just DFS value out there for us.
Yeah, it's funny with Memphis, because we've actually been the beneficiaries of some pretty good Memphis games recently. We ran Ja and Jonas Valanciunas together in that Atlanta game, and that was part of why we literally came in first. I think this might have been the first time this has happened, when I was on the system where just the optimal lineup on DraftKings just came in straight up first place in the contest it was in. A very, very good feeling. And, those guys were pretty highly owned. Now, the question with the matchup with Orlando is basically, Orlando historically has been slightly plus matchup. They're just not this year. They play slow. They play pretty good defense. It's a 9-game slate. While you could argue that the minutes have maybe been a little bit up and down for the Grizz simply due to those weird game scripts, I still think that these players are somewhat efficiently priced, so I don't know that you need to stretch yourself to try to stick any in there. The next time the Grizzlies are in a good matchup, I think you're going to want to go back to the well in the same way that we did against Atlanta, but I certainly don't think you need to do that here. And then kind of going the other way, yeah, Fournier has been out, but hasn't really moved the needle that much for these other guys. And, while Memphis actually has been a pretty good matchup, I'd say the only guy I could see, well, I'd say there's probably two guys that have gotten pretty decent DFS usage recently, and that's Aaron Gordon and Nikola Vucevic. I think both of those guys are probably going to be in consideration for a lot of people, but both of them seem at least close to fairly priced to me.
Yeah, you can get pretty aggressive. They've really ticked up Gordon's minutes, and he's really rebounded the ball really well in the aggregate over the last seven games. There was a dip with a little injury thing there, but then he came back with 10 boards against the aforementioned Rockets, and then Vooch put up 16 and 16 in 33 minutes against the Rockets. But yeah, in general, I think that we've seen the prices kind of climb, and even the guys who really benefit from the no Evan Fournier, guys like Terrence Ross off the bench, but he's pretty much correctly priced at this point. So and Michael Carter Williams played a lot last game, but that game got out of hand. So I'm really not sure on the Orlando side what you're really getting value-wise. 10 o'clock game, Phoenix goes in and plays Portland. The injury news here that we're waiting on that actually becomes sort of important is DeAndre Ayton is questionable with an ankle. He has sat out the last couple games, much to Aaron Baines' benefit, who's played a ton and been really, really awesome. I'm not sure we're going to have this news ahead of time, and if we don't, then we can't play Baines. If you don't know Ayton's status, then you have to just lower your expectations on Baines. But the other players here, like Ricky Rubio, like Devin Booker, they've been playing a lot. Rubio has been awesome. Booker has been awesome from a usage standpoint. I feel like Rubio right now, he played 37 minutes last game against Milwaukee. Now, that was a compromised Milwaukee team because they didn't have Giannis, but he went for 25, 13, and 13. And Booker poured in a lot of points as well. I think these guys just make excellent cash game plays. Booker's minutes, you can safely project him at 38 minutes a game at this point, 39 minutes. They have no problem running him a ton. Would the Ayton piece affect either of these guys for you? Not knowing Ayton, would it affect our expectation on Rubio and Booker? Because Ayton does have some usage, but I don't know. I just don't know where that lands. Clearly on Baines, but it's a little less clear for me on Booker and Rubio.
Well, yeah, Ayton has usage, but it's not like Baines has just been standing there doing nothing, right? I mean, Baines has put 39 shots in the air in the last two games. So I think, whatever usage Ayton's going to get when he comes back is certainly not going to outstrip Baines by too much. And the nice thing about this, I think the thing that makes you feel really warm and fuzzy, is that we've had this exact situation two games ago, right? And when you look at those games, who were the guys that succeeded? The guys that you want to play tonight, Rubio, Booker, both those guys played excellently in that game. Dario Saric, too, had a really good game. We know that Phoenix and Portland, as crazy as it would have sounded to say this last year, these teams are just pretty similar. And, you know, Portland has had a lot of struggles this year, and one of the main ones has been defensively. So I think, yeah, I'm certainly ready to roll it back. Rubio in particular just seems straight up underpriced. Just, I mean, you can go back, geez, to the All-Star break? Yeah, I think you can go back to the All-Star break and see that this guy is at the very least a $7,000 player, if not, you know, pushing up towards $75,000 or $8,000. So that FanDuel price just seems straight up wrong here.
Right now we have Rubio, Booker, and Michael Bridges all in our top FanDuel lineup. Again, these things are all subject to change, but Bridges, he's just mostly just a minutes guy that plays a ton of minutes, doesn't do a ton. Like, he's clearly the fourth or fifth option on offense when he's out there, but he's gotten up double-digit shots. But again, he needs like all 40 minutes to really maintain this kind of price. But you mentioned Portland. Portland's just one of the worst defensive teams in the league. They're like 27th in defensive efficiency or something like that this year. And so they just don't, I mean, they're going to get Jusuf Nurkic back pretty soon here, but and that will probably help them a little, but there's, you know, he's not going to play a ton, and that's not going to happen this game. So, yeah, I love the Phoenix side of this. What about the Portland side? They are favored here, and guys like Lillard, guys like McCollum. I mean, Lillard, I'm probably a little low on Lillard's minutes here. He hasn't been all that good since coming back from the injury in terms of just efficiency, and just the stats haven't been there, and it's not like he wasn't getting good matchups. He played against the Suns. He played 38 minutes and put up 33 fantasy points. Washington is a great matchup. The Kings are a decent matchup, and he just hasn't really been all that good. I could probably tick the minutes up here. I'm not sure it really matters, and I'm just not sure when he's around if all the rest of these guys are worth it either. What are your thoughts here on Portland?
Yeah, you're going to want to be careful with Lillard, I think, tonight, because there's two things going on. First of all, his year-to-date stats, I think, are just going to be off based on that truly absurd stretch he had. And combining his all-time career peak performance with a prolonged injury and a return to reality afterwards leads me to believe that Lillard, you know, because we were looking at him as a $10,000 plus player for a little while. And while 9,200 looks like sort of a bargain, that's still basically just fair value on his year-to-date stats. And so I don't think you're going to want to, I just don't see any reason to do it, right? How many great point guard plays have we listed so far? Right. We just threw Rubio into an already very competitive field. So Lillard, just not the answer for me tonight. And he does enough, like you said, alongside these other plays, that he's going to, you know, at least apply 10% downward pressure on their prices too, from my perspective. And, you know, not all of them have gotten there just yet. So, yeah, unfortunately, Portland, pretty good matchup here. I think this game does have interesting big tournament implications. You know, maybe you can sneak in a CJ McCollum type guy at a shooting guard position that's pretty weak, but by and large, this isn't going to be a classic like two-way stack or anything.
All right, 10:30 games. There's two of them. First is Clippers and Golden State. Clippers are 11-point road favorites here against the Warriors, who have gotten Steph Curry back, although Curry has the flu, not the coronavirus, tested negative for coronavirus, so bullet dodged on that one. But he does have the flu here. Not sure if he's going to be, if he's going to see the court. And that we're almost definitely not going to have news about that before this starts. Not sure it matters, really. The Clippers getting fully healthy here and looking, I mean, lost to the Lakers the other day, but in general looking very good around this team. That being said, when everyone's playing, you know, it's just we're all kind of a race to the bottom in terms of like their overall fantasy production. And then, like I said, Golden State is just too hard to figure for me without knowing the Curry news. Is that like a fair way to sum this game up at this point? Mm-hmm. I mean, if Curry were to sit, maybe. Feels like they'd get absolutely dumpstered no matter what. But.
Yes, that would be my concern. The Clippers have just been looking like the scary team that many people thought they would be coming into this season. You know, especially like those, okay, the Lakers game, whatever. The Houston and Oklahoma City games where they were playing against two teams that are like, a lot of people have been like, well, what about this team? Not a team you want to face in the playoffs. Don't tell that to the Clippers, because they've been absolutely eviscerated those two teams. And while they might not feel the need to get up for the Golden State game in the same way, it still is, you know, the reigning big dog in the West. And I think teams have been sort of sticking to it, I don't know, for revenge. But you remember like Pat Beverly early in the season, he was like so happy when they were beating Golden State. I just think they're going to bring it. I don't think you want to mess with any of these Golden State guys, even if there's more opportunity opened up.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Let's hit the final game. the Lakers host my Brooklyn Nets fresh off off the Kenny Atkinson firing. Lakers are 11.5-point home favorites here against a Nets team who did win their first game post Kenny Atkinson when they beat the Bulls. The only real news here.
I will say the
news on the Nets is that the reason Atkinson was fired is because he just didn't want to play a certain style that some of these other guys want to play. And we actually saw a clear shift the first game without him, where Jared Allen just doesn't start and DeAndre Jordan comes in and plays 30 minutes as the starter. That was the first. That was like the first kind of like domino that fell. It was very clear about like what were all the reasons he wasn't going to be here anymore. Well, this is one of them. DeAndre is going to get the start. And the starters, LeVert and Dinwiddie specifically, played a decent amount of minutes, something Atkinson was always sort of unwilling to do. So I think we can make some judgment calls on at least, rotations for this team. Again, I'm not sure it matters against the Lakers in a game where they could really get blown out. But going forward, like if they were to get blown out this game, I still think we could be aggressive on some of these minutes. That being said, guys like Dinwiddie are kind of coming a little cheap. Like DeAndre Jordan, 5,500 against in a game where they're so big, it feels like he's going to play as long as the game stays close. And then we have LeBron and AD going in the other direction. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, this is a tricky one, man, because, I don't know that sneaking by the Bulls is any big credit to the new administration here in Brooklyn.
No.
I think this is going to be a pretty tough one for them. And you highlighted the point. Like, I don't think you can play Dinwiddie at LeVert at essentially fair prices here. Both of them, I guess more so LeVert, but both of them had pretty secure roles already and kind of have earned these prices, if you know what I mean. When it comes to DeAndre Jordan, though, he is the type of guy, we've seen him compile numbers in the past, and he's still been super, like whatever you want to say about him being old, having difficulty moving, on a fantasy points per minute basis this season, he'd still be pretty damn strong. And if he really is going to go from being a 19-minute-a-game guy to a 28-minute-a-game guy, that will justify this price point. And I think in a matchup against the Lakers, like I just wish it was any other matchup, because the likelihood that they just get completely rolled here is high enough that I'm pretty concerned about a big man with trouble shooting free throws. Like, that just doesn't seem like a great fit for how this game could potentially go. But I'm ready to see DeAndre Jordan in my DFS lineups at some point soon. And if it were tonight, what does your gut tell you? I mean, if you gave him 29 minutes, does that feel too high, first of all? And second of all, would you be comfortable just rolling it out there and hoping for the best?
At 5,500, he's in DraftKings right now. Not a universal play, but it's at least a question. I will say that the Jordan thing, just from having watched the game, and is that I'm actually comfortable like being able to contribute. He passed really late, had 4 assists in the game. They weren't by accident. They ran like a lot of high post stuff through him, and so it wasn't like these assists just kind of materialized out of nowhere and will disappear. There was a somewhat of a shift in the way their offense ran, just from having watched this team all year, that they were just running high post stuff where he was just finding cutters and finding just guys around the perimeter, and they moved the ball a lot. So I think the assists are real. I think for DraftKings, he has a pretty high floor, even at if they got beat by a lot and he played 24 minutes. I don't think he totally kills you at 5,500. I don't think you have to do it on DraftKings or on FanDuel, where just like Drummond, I think, is just such a good play at 8,000 that I wouldn't take the risk there. And if DeAndre Ayton didn't play, then I think you could play a guy like Bane. So I think that's probably where I land on it. And I'd still be worried. I'd definitely be worried about the blowout just because this Nets team is still not very good. So, and then real quick, give me your quick thoughts on I wrote up Anthony Davis as just a good play tonight. He feels undervalued. Like, of all the expensive guys, he feels not DeAndre Jordan, but not Andre Drummond, but less than 10,000 on FanDuel. I'm screwing everything up here. On DraftKings, feels like a really, really nice value, even in a game where that might get away from them.
Yeah, our system has been really wanting to roll Davis out there a lot recently, and the only thing that ever gives me pause on him is this little GTD tag, because I get that he's probable. Anthony Davis should just have his own injury reporting rules or something like that, because he is the guy. I mean, on DraftKings, it hurts you less because there's late swap and there's actual, other ways you could pivot the money in this game, but that's the only thing that would give me any concern, is just that slight chance of an injury situation. I don't think it's enough to move the needle on DraftKings. I think if your model is showing that he is a good play at 35 minutes or whatever, I think you can roll him out there. But yeah, it's at least enough to make me question, and would be a tiebreaker sort of thing where I would want to lean Harden, in a game with potentially a similar game script, similar matchup, I think I'd just as soon play Harden at a big money spot and try to go somewhere else. But, you know, maybe you can play both.
Who knows? And I think people are going to want to talk themselves into LeBron, maybe, who's been tremendous over the last, really all season, obviously, but the last four.
Career.
Career. All 80,000 minutes or whatever he's played. But specifically lately, you know, he put up 28-9-8 against the Clippers, 37-8-8 against the Milwaukee. Triple doubled against New Orleans. The defensive stats have been there a little bit more for him recently than they have in the past, so that's boosted him a little. I don't know. I probably still lean Harden here. Real quick, thoughts on LeBron safety versus Harden safety in this one, because I think this might be like the final question that comes down to for people.
It's very similar in my mind. I think LeBron gets a little even more of that credit of, if it's a blowout, it's his fault, than Harden does, just because the Rockets do have, especially when it comes to scoring, just do have some other options, where the Lakers just really don't. Like, they're a team made up of guys like Avery Bradley and Danny Green, and, you know, their centers who can simply just disappear or just go into their, you know, role of standing around as an outlet if it doesn't work between LeBron and AD for some reason. So I think for that reason, LeBron probably gets the slight safety edge there, but I think either one's fine, and I think you can kind of just go with, you know, the oftentimes the unsung aspect of this decision making for us is, who are the other options at the position? And, you know, we've discussed a few good shooting guard plays so far. I think the only small forward we've even mentioned is Michael Bridges.
Yeah, we mentioned Hayward. I kind of glossed. Oh, Hayward, I glossed over Rudy Gay, who I think is actually a good play too, like in the San Antonio game. So there were some other ones. And a few more than there were. There's really no cheap real options that I saw on shooting guard on FanDuel. So that's not that there's none, but in terms of like highest points per dollar, you have like Bryn Forbes, since then has guys like Bryn Forbes and Dylan Brooks and Courtney Lee, and you're like, I don't know about this, right? I don't know about that.
We played Dylan Brooks the other night, buddy, in our now famous first place lineup on DraftKings. He was in there.
All right, well, there you go. Dylan Brooks everywhere. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com/deals will get you started on a free 7-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. It's optimal lineups for NBA, NHL, which our chatter's just been over the moon about. Our users have been over the moon about NHL with our guy Chris Durrell, who's been just murdering it since – I mean, really all season, but specifically the heater the NHL is on, it feels like from what we're being told and the feedback we're getting is worth it on its own, but it's all covered under one subscription package. So free for 7 days and then just $29.95 a month. It'll cover you for baseball as well. So go find a better deal than that, where you're just getting all this stuff under one blanket, under one umbrella. Anything you can pile things under, that's what you're getting it under here. DFSR.com/deals will get you started. Buddy, enjoy your Tuesday night in hoops.
Oh, I will, man.